Today, a game in two halves. A market update for the 24th of July 2021. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, working at his post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's show, we look at the latest from the financial markets around the world and try to read between the lines as positive news from the US results season drowns out other more concerning issues. The megaphone pattern continues to expand as expected. In New York, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed above the 35,000 level for the first time on Friday, as the blue chip gauge and other major indices ended the week on a strong note, logging record finishes. The rally capped a week that began with a heavy sell-off that saw the Dow post its biggest one-day drop since October, with the bounce attributed to easing worries about the economic impact of the spread of the Delta coronavirus variant and upbeat corporate earnings. Signs of economic revival fueled investor risk appetite as inflation fears faded, or did they? One of the most underappreciated things about the equity markets right now is just how much these earnings have risen and how much analysts have had to revise their earnings estimates up, Wells Fargo Investment Institute head of global asset allocation, Tracy McMillan, told Bloomberg. She added that she's tracking the Delta variant in case it affects consumer behavior and the shift in the recovery from great to really good. The US is at another pivotal moment in this pandemic, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Rochelle Walensky said, as the number of daily cases involving the variant continues to rise in unvaccinated pockets of the population. Investors also digested the latest economic data, with a higher than expected 419,000 initial jobless claims filed throughout the past week. The number was at a two-month high, with 360,000 claims filed during the previous week and 350,000 claims that were forecast. And other data show that existing home sales also rose to 5.86 million in June for the first time in 5 months. A measure of activity in US service providers settled back in July to a five-month low, reflecting businesses' persistent struggle to fill positions and stock shelves. The ISH Market Flash Index of purchasing managers in the service sector slipped to 59.8 from 64.6 a month earlier. And while the gauge has softened since roaring to a record in May, it remains historically elevated. Readings above 50 indicate growth. A measure of services employment cooled to a four-month low, with companies indicating that the inability to lure workers was holding back activity. Combined with still elevated measures of input costs and selling prices, the lack of available labour led to weaker business expectations. At the same time, the IHS Market US Manufacturing Purchases Managers Index advanced to a fresh record of 63.1 from 62.1 a month earlier. The group's price measures also climbed to the highest reading in data back to 2017. While the second quarter may therefore represent a peaking in the pace of economic growth, according to the PMI, the third quarter is still looking encouragingly strong, Chris Williamson, chief business economist at IHS Markets, said. Short-term capacity issues remain a concern, constraining output in manufacturing and service sector companies, while simultaneously pushing prices higher as demand exceeds supply. Order backlogs at US manufacturers were the second highest on record, according to the group's measure. The composite index, measuring output at both manufacturers and service providers, slipped to a four-month low. Evercore ISI's chairman Ed Hayman said retailers have more power than ever to pass on higher prices to consumers, and that will spur earnings growth in the quarters ahead. But inflation is not going to be transitory, according to Mohammed El Arin, the chief economic advisor at Alliance SE. I have a whole list of companies that have announced price increases that have told us they expect further price increases and they expect them to stick, he said. And he explained the current 10-year Treasury yield is below 1.3% because the Fed is injecting liquidity into the market with monthly purchases of $120 billion in securities. The Fed should ease its foot slowly off the accelerator, he said. But the Dow rose around 0.7% to 35,062. The S&P 500 jumped 1% to 4,412. And the Nasdaq Composite rose 1% at 14,837. Of the 11 major sectors in the S&P 500, all but energy closed green, with communication services enjoying the largest gain, up 2.7%. After this week's gain in equities, the S&P 500 is now up 97% from the depths of the pandemic. Although the rapid spread of the Delta variant has sown volatility, several investors are betting that a robust economic recovery will fuel corporate America, even with a threat of higher inflation. We see a continuation of the last couple of days. It's a roller coaster in reverse. We did the drop first, and we've been climbing back to the top ever since, said Chris Zaccarelli, Chief Investment Officer at Independent Advisor Alliance in Charlotte, North Carolina. Growth and value stocks seesawed for much of the week as market participants weighed spiking infections of the COVID-19 Delta variant against strong corporate results and signs of economic revival. There's push and there's pull. There's clearly conflict in the market, Zaccarelli added. There's a strong difference of opinion as to whether the future's bright or whether there are clouds on the horizon. Market participants now look towards next week for the Federal Reserve's two-day monetary policy meeting and a series of high-profile earnings. The Fed's statement will be parsed for clues regarding the time frame for tightening its accommodative policies, although Chairman Jerome Powell has repeatedly said the economy still needs the central bank's full support. The Fed will not change course quickly at next week's meeting, despite the high inflation rates, Commerzbank said. However, it is likely to push ahead with preparations and possibly present some ensuing considerations. Second quarter reporting season is in full swing, with 120 of the companies in the S&P 500 having reported. Of those, 88% have beaten consensus, according to Refinitiv. We're seeing companies, on average, beating on the top and on the bottom line, Zaccarelli said. We're seeing the resilience of the consumer, and that's been the story of the earnings season so far. Analysts now expect aggregate year-over-year S&P 500 earnings growth of around 78.1% for the April to June period, a sizable increase from the 54% annual growth seen at the beginning of the quarter. Chipmaker Intel Corp said that it still faces supply constraints and provided disappointing guidance, and its stock fell 5.3%. The bears will question the increased magnitude of the implied decline in gross margins, while also pointing to concerns around PCs, with Client Computing Group needing to decline through the remainder of the year to offset the forecast pickup in Data Center Group, Wedbush said, as it lowered its target price on Intel to $50 from $53. Social media firms Twitter and Snap advanced 3% and 23.8% respectively on the back of their upbeat results. Those results bode well for Facebook, which is due to post second quarter results next week. Its stock surged 5.3% to notch record highs. We are bullish on advertising momentum heading into the second half, led by strong demand across large advertisers, evidenced by quarter three guidance being 8% above street expectations, Oppenheimer said, as it raised its price target on Twitter to $85 from $70. Other high-profile earnings expected next week include Tesla, Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Amazon. Financials, meanwhile, were underperforming relative to broader markets as bank stocks continued to be shunned despite a rise in yields. Although American Express was up 1%, which outperformed relative to broader financials, following better than expected quarterly revenue and earnings. Concerns about the outlook on economic recovery had sent yields spiralling earlier this week, with the 10-year falling 1.14%, and the decline in benchmark 10-year US Treasury yields in July could be a signal that economic growth is peaking as the number of COVID-19 cases involving the Delta variant continues to trend upwards and force more countries to impose restrictive measures. But longer-term US Treasuries broke a two-day fall with strong demand for an auction of 10-year inflation-protected securities, producing a record low yield. In summary, earnings are reflecting an incredible snapback in economic activity, said Jeffrey Kleintop, chief global investment strategist at Charles Schwab & Co. Concerns that stocks are overvalued are less potent here in terms of a threat to the market, simply because earnings are rising at a fast clip. Elsewhere, oil prices edged lower on Thursday and Friday, stabilising after a volatile trading week. The crude market has posted gains of around 8% over the last 3 days, largely recouping Monday's slump, when sentiment was hit by worries over rising COVID cases and an agreement between top producers to add supply. European stock markets traded higher on Friday, helped by a supportive tone from the European Central Bank and more positive quarterly corporate earnings. The ECB kept its very accommodative monetary policy in place and maintained its benchmark interest rate at 0%, as well as its $1.85 trillion euro asset purchase scheme, while also tying its new forward guidance on interest rates more closely to inflation, suggesting they aren't likely to raise anything soon. This update suggests the ECB is now one of the more dovish members of the central bank club, likely supporting the recovery the stock market has made from Monday's rout. Also helping this has been the generally strong quarterly corporate updates in the early stages of this earnings season, and Friday, of course, was no exception. The German flash composite PMI rose to 62.5 in July from 60.1 in June, hitting its highest level in nearly a quarter of a century. And that was helped by an easing of virus containment measures in Europe's largest economy. The news was less impressive in France, with its composite PMI falling to 56.8 points in July from 57.4 in June, its lowest figure in 3 months. UK retail sales rose 0.5% in July, a welcome improvement after the previous month's 1.4% slump, and that's 9.7% on the year. The FTSE was up 0.85% to 7,027. The German DAX was 1% higher at 15,669. And the euro, US dollar, was up 0.03% to 1.1773. Asia Pacific stocks were mostly up on Friday morning, but they've ended the week on a cautious note as investors digested the latest US economic data and earnings. But China's Shanghai Composite was down 0.68%. as Didi Global came under scrutiny as regulators mulled serious, even unprecedented penalties to punish the ride-sharing company after its controversial US IPO in June. Japanese markets were shut for a holiday ahead of the Tokyo Olympic Games opening ceremony later in the day, and in an unprecedented move, the event will take place, of course, without spectators due to the state of emergency declared in the country. A sharp recovery from a heavy sell-off at the start of the week helped drive the Australian share market to a new record high ahead of the beginnings of the August earnings season. The ASX 200 index rose 0.6% to 7,394 this week, with a 0.1% advance on Friday, pushing the market to a record high. Despite the local share market dipping at the start of the week following a heavy sell-off on Wall Street, it rebounded firmly in the back half of the week, supported by gains in the number of blue chip stocks. CSL led the market gains, rising 5.7% to 293.48, and driving a strong performance from the healthcare sector. Cochlear advanced 2.8% to 246.07. ResMed added 4.1% to 35.09. Sonic Healthcare climbed 2.6% to $40.10. Ramsay Healthcare rose 2.4% to 64.64, and NIB Holdings firmed 8.8% to $7.15. A number of blue chips also supported the gains, with Wes Farmers up 4.8% to 61.93. The Commonwealth Bank added 0.9% to 99.12, and Woolworths firmed 3.3% to 39.52. ANZ rose 0.9% to 27.69, and Macquarie Group advanced 1.4% to 157.70. The tech stocks also helped the market climb higher through the week. Afterpay climbed 3.4% to 106.70, Xero firmed 4.2% to 142.92, and Nuix climbed 9.8% to 281. Symic Group rose 9.4% to 21.03 after reporting a bounce back from a difficult 2020. It reported a 34% drop in interim net profit to $209 million on Wednesday. A number of smaller miners were among the best performers, with strong gains particularly coming from the battery mineral stocks after BHP Group signed a nickel supply deal with Tesla. Pilbara Minerals added 8.5% to 172, Iluka Resources climbed 10% to 975, and Linus Rare Earths rose 4.2% to 643. The major miners weren't as strong, though, as the price of iron ore declined through the week. BHP Group led the market losses, falling 1.2% to 51.27, while Rio Tinto dropped 2.7% to 127.10, and Fortescue Metals Group slid 2.1% to 25.25. Altium declined 9.4% to 33.11 after Autodesk walked away from its takeover bid for the company, saying its $40 a share bid was never considered by Altium's board. Now, there's an interesting perspective on gold from Sunshine Profits, highlighting the range of uncertainties on the horizon. The current high inflation could theoretically transform into hyperinflation, disinflation, stagflation, or deflation. And what does each mean for gold? Well, we know that prices have surged recently, and we all know that high inflation is likely to stay with us for a while, even if we assume that the CPI annual rate has already peaked, which, by the way, is not that obvious. But let's look beyond the nearest horizon and think about what lies ahead after months of high inflation and what consequences it could have for the gold market. From the logical point of view, there are three options. Inflation rates could accelerate further, leading to hyperinflation in the extreme case. They could remain more or less the same, resulting possibly in stagflation when the pace of GDP growth deaccelerates. And finally, the rates of annual changes in the CPI could slow down, implying disinflation, or they could even become negative. In this scenario, we would enter the world of deflation. So, which of these inflations awaits us? Well, although some commentators scare us with the spectre of hyperinflation, that is one variant that he rejects. Sure, the inflation rate at 5% is relatively high, but it's not even close to 50%, which is an accepted hyperinflation threshold. We also don't see people getting rid of depreciating money as quickly as possible. Instead, the demand for money has been rising recently, or in other words, the velocity of money has been decreasing. It's also worth remembering that hyperinflation usually occurs when fiscal deficits are financed by money creation, especially when the government cannot raise funds through borrowing or taxes, for example, because of a war or other socio-political convolutions. Sure, the budget deficits are partially monetized, but we are far from the situation in which the US government will be unable to collect taxes or find lenders ready to buy its bonds. Hence, gold bugs counting on hyperinflation may be disappointed, but I doubt that they would really want to live during the collapse of the monetary system. In any case, he said, the opposite scenario, deflation, is also unlikely. To be clear, asset price deflation is possible if some of the asset bubbles burst, but the absolute declines in the consumer prices, similar to those observed during the Great Depression or even the Great Recession, are not very probable, he said. The broad money supply is still increasing rapidly. The fiscal policy remains easy as never. And the Fed remains ultra dovish and ready to intervene to prevent deflation. For deflation to happen, we would need to have the next global financial crisis, which would severely hit the aggregate demand and oil prices. Although there are significant vulnerabilities in the financial sector, it's definitely too early to talk about significant deflation risks on the horizon. As with hyperinflation, this is bad news for gold, as the yellow metal performs well during the deflationary crisis, although at the beginning people usually collect cash, disposing of almost all assets. So we're left with two other options. Inflation will either diminish to its previous levels, maybe to slightly higher readings than before the pandemic, and will return more or less to the Goldilocks economy, or inflation will stay relatively high, although it may subside a bit, while the economic growth will slow down significantly and more than inflation. It goes without saying that the latter option would be much better for gold than the former one, as gold doesn't like periods of deaccelerating inflation rates and of a decent pace of economic growth. Remember the 1980s and 1990s? So, could gold investors reasonably ask whether we will experience disinflation or stagflation? Well, the Fed believes that the current high inflation readings will prove to be temporary and we will be returning to the pre-pandemic era of low inflation. But you can't step in the same river twice, and you can't step in the same economy twice. You can't undo all the monetary and fiscal stimulus, nor the surge in the broad money supply and the public debt. So the pre-pandemic low inflation readings are not set in stone, and the impact of some deflationary forces could be exaggerated by the central bankers and the pundits. For example, the recent ECB research shows that the disinflationary role of globalization has been economically small. Hence, he says, I worry about stagflation. I'm not alone. The results of the latest biannual survey of the chief US economists from 27 financial institutions for the US Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association also highlight the risks of high inflation and stagnation. They reveal that 87% of respondents consider stagflation, as opposed to hyperinflation or deflation, as the biggest risk to the economy. Actually, the GDP growth is commonly projected to slow down significantly next year. For example, according to the recent Fed dot plot, the pace of the economic growth will decline from 7% in 2021 to 3.3% in 2022. It's still fast, but less than half of this year's growth, and it's likely to be slower as the FOMC members tend to be overly optimistic. The stagflation scenario could be positive for gold, as the yellow metal likes the combination of sluggish or even negative growth and high inflation. Indeed, gold shined in the 1970s, the era of the great stagflation. Of course, there are important differences between then and now, but the economic laws are immutable. The mix of easy fiscal policy and monetary policy superimposed on economic reopening is a recipe for overheating and ultimately stagflation. However, so far the markets have bet on transitory inflation. Moreover, they are focused on fast economic expansion and the Fed's hawkish signals. But we could see more uncertainty later this year when high interest rates and inflation hamper the economic activity. And finally to Bitcoin, which slipped below 30,000 US before recovering slightly. Synonymous crypto analyst Crypto Burp has revealed on social media he believes the price of the flagship cryptocurrency Bitcoin is, quote, ready for a major bounce and a final move up in this bull cycle near the end of the year. In a tweet sent to his over 320,000 followers, Burp noted that over-the-counter outflows signaled a Bitcoin buy signal, and it aligns perfectly with a complete reset in trend and momentum for Bitcoin, which implies the downward movements Bitcoin has been seeing may be over. In his tweet, he said that he also analysed the net unrealised profit or loss indicator, which measures the difference between unrealised profit and loss to determine whether most investors are in a state of profit or loss. He said it's as oversold as it was back in September 2020, before Bitcoin's price started surging to its new all-time high. And he added that the market may still drop to 23,000 to 24,000 US before recovering and predicting a final move up in the current bull market, which may occur only by the end of the year in November or December. Now, it's worth noting that on-chain has shown that Bitcoin reserves on centralized cryptocurrency trading platforms have been steadily dropping even as the market ticks downward. An average of 36,000 Bitcoin have been leaving exchanges every month. In a report, Glassnode noted that the amount of Bitcoin being held by cryptocurrency exchanges is steadily dropping as large investors are moving their funds into secure cold wallet storage instead of leaving them on exchanges where they could be ready to sell their funds. But the number of entities holding Bitcoin since May has increased from roughly 250,000 to nearly 300,000. These entities are described as unique clusters of addresses belonging to one individual or organizations. And data shows whales may be leading the accumulation as wallets with between 1,000 and 10,000 bitcoins are now holding as much bitcoin as they were when the price was at $57,000. Now, I'm going to have more to say on how influencers are crueling the crypto markets and how average investors are getting sucked in. Just remember, though, that these are unregulated, decentralized markets where the real value of a digital asset could be zero. And many early adopters and founders are making handsome profits on the backs of later, less experienced investors. This may not yet end well. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.